Blog Talk Radio.
We like the Wu-Tang.
Welcome to the War Room. We got Dan, Kim, Jimmy, PJ, B. Austin, the Hot Block Commander.
How you wanna end a 1 or 2 hour show to keep the brain running with the premise of talk sports on a national level? Roll with the topic, sort of like the rubber. When it's game time, they like the Fab Five during prime time. Sports conglomerates speak their minds a little bit. For sports medicine and sports veterans and greats. The 4 for 26, so the war in Kuwait. It's the War Room with five knights at the round table. Five Philly guys, diversified and educated.
War Room Nation, it's week 2 in the month of October, and the generals are back at you at our regular time. You are once again live in the War Room, brought to you by War Room Sports. I'm Devin McMillan, and I'm here with my partners, Jimmy Williams, B. Austin, Akil Bayon, and Paul Johnson. We had a great trip to Canada for the Blogs with Boss Conference, and we are now back in show mode. We'll recap another wild week in the NFL as we look ahead to week 6. About a quarter into hour 2, we'll be talking with UrbanCuss.com founder Rahel Tesfamariam about the success of her site, as well as some pressing social issues in sports. Please join us tonight in the JW Philly Realty chat room right now at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom, or join us on Facebook or Twitter at War Room Sports. You can also call us directly when we open up the Digital Extreme Tech hotline 30 minutes from now at 323-410-0012. But before we get started, we want to give a few shout-outs to some of the best in the business. Make sure you check out Roy and Chris on the Broad Street Line every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. Also check out Brandon, Chris, and Daniel of Sports Trap Radio every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on ueradiolive.com. And be sure to check out Mojo on the season ticket on Sundays at 7 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio. But look, if you can't catch any of them live, no sweat. You can hear all of these great shows as well as our other partners at warroomsports.blogspot.com anytime, any place. So finally, don't forget to catch us in syndication 3 times on Fridays at newvibradio.com. That's N-U-V-I-B-E radio.com. And we're on every Friday at 7 a.m., 1 p.m., and 7 p.m. But it's showtime right now, so we're going to see who Jimmy has on his birthday list.
My birthday! Yay!
What's up, gentlemen?
Yo,
what's up,
yo,
sir?
Back from the center of the earth.
Yeah, no doubt. Before I get started, I want everybody to know that the birthdays are brought to you by DirecTV. If you like a better TV experience than cable has to offer, that's including the NFL Sunday Ticket, go to our website, warroomsports.com, and click on the DirecTV logo and order a better TV experience. Of course you get the discount or rate. Everybody likes, you know, hookups. You get the War Room Sports hookup. Just go to warroomsports.com and click on the DirecTV logo. Now, let's get just jump right into these birthdays, man. The first birthday I want to bring up is one Michelle Sung Wee, a.k.a. Michelle Wee, who turns 23.
It's my birthday! Yay!
Dev, I'll start with you. When I say Michelle Wee, what comes to mind?
Yo, first of all, you know, as long as Michelle Wee has been on the golf scene, it's crazy that she's only turning 23 years old today. That's the craziest part about it. But, you know, she was playing golf at, like, age 10. She was in the amateur championship. And then I forgot exactly what age she was when she made her first WPGA appearance. But she's been in the golf world for a while. She came in with a lot of hype because of her age. I'm not sure if she's lived up to all of that hype yet, but she's a pretty good golfer. And you know, she's not hard to look at either. she's old enough for me to say that now.
Yeah, how about that? It's funny because she's 23, and I feel like she's been playing golf for 23 years already. but, yeah, absolutely. B. Austin, when I say Michelle Wee, what comes to mind? Okay, that comes to mind. Doc Bay, let's go to you, because B. Austin obviously has nothing to say. Doc Bay, when I say Michelle Wee, what comes to mind?
She's not hard on the eyes, as my colleague said. But I do think she's a bit overrated. She hasn't really won much since the middle of the decade. But shout out to her. She's also 6'1", so she's a tall bitty.
By the way, that was B. Austin, because initially you didn't respond. But anyway, Doc Bay, Go ahead and tell us what you think about Michelle Wee.
Like the rest of you guys, I remember when she was 16 and killing her age group in golf. She's from South Korean descent, born in Hawaii. Her nickname is Big Weezy, and as Bjorken alluded to, she's 6'1", and she's a Stanford grad with a degree in communications. But what's funny about that, they wouldn't let her play on the golf team. Like, come on, man, she could have got Stanford, like, some NCAA championships. And like you all alluded to, she's very easy on the eyes when compared to many of the other LPGA players.
Yeah, had everybody thinking she was only 60. Anyway, yeah, so shout out to Michelle Wee on her birthday. Let's jump right to the next birthday. This one is Michael Alex Conley Jr., a.k.a. Mike Conley Jr., who turns 25.
Birthday. Yay!
Personally, I think of Joe Button slandering him on the BET Freestyle, but that's just me. But I'll move on to you, gentlemen. I'll start with you this time, Doc Bay. Mike Conley Jr.
Mike Conley Jr. His dad, Mike Conley Sr., was a great track star, won Olympic silver and gold medals in, like, the triple jump. His dad also used to dunk in the halftime of, like, was it, NBA games, the one, like, those dunk contests against him and Barry Sanders. And his dad is an agent now for him and Greg Oden. And Mike Conley, he's fast. I think he led the league in steals last year, but he needs to really work on his overall point guard game, running the team, and most importantly, his jump shot, so teams don't play off him. So there you go.
Gotcha. Dev, what do you think about Mike Conley?
Yo, I usually, when we talk basketball, I usually come at Mike Conley's head for not being that good, and, you know, it hurts my heart that he's playing and Allen Iverson is not. But, I mean, he's not actually as bad as I usually make him out to be, but it is also my opinion that he's not good enough to be a starting point guard in the NBA. I do think he's an NBA player, and Kill just kind of told us, you know, some of his discerning skills, but I don't know. Every time I see him running that team, I just think that the Grizzlies could be so much better if they had a better point guard.
Well, let me ask you a question. Do you think he's the worst starting point guard in the league?
Hard to say.
That's what I'm about to say. Just right off the top, I got to think of like 30 cats. I'm not sure. Probably not.
The reason I asked that, he's
more talented than that.
Because you said that you don't think he should be a starter point guard in this league. So I was just wondering, like, do you think he's the worst, point guard in the league?
No, because I'm pretty sure it's a few other point guards who shouldn't be starting point guards in the league.
Is he better than Rio? Is he better than Mario Chalmers?
No.
Rio has a certain level of heart that I respect. He's more talented than Mario Chalmers. You know what I'm saying? He's quicker. Things of that nature. But I don't know if, you know, not that Rio's an exceptionally smart player, but I don't think he's a smarter player than Mario. But how smart you got to be when you're playing with LeBron, Bosh, and Wade? Just get him the ball. Get out the way. Shoot.
D. Austin, what is your opinion of one Mike Conley Jr.? I didn't know he was rated how to begin with.
Yeah,
that's what I was going.
I didn't really know he was rated either until I got into these dialogues over the course of the last 24 months as Memphis made, you know, headlines in the playoffs and people started mentioning silly stuff like he's nice and people started paying him big contracts. And, you know, FOH, Mike Conley is a bum, has always been a bum, and always will be a bum. Can't play the point guard in the NBA, and you can't shoot a jumper unless your name is Dre Miller or Eric Snow. He can't descend because he's too light, and he runs faster than he dribbles the ball. Now, think about that. Most people do, but he's, man.
I don't think he's as bad as y'all making him out to be. I don't think he's great.
No, even I didn't go that bad on him, but.
Yeah,
no, he can't defend anything, and he can't really pass.
Yo,
he just runs an offense.
And
they paid him like $32 million for it.
Listen, man. All I'm saying is the man isn't as bad as you making him sound, man.
All right.
You said he can't shoot and play the point. Rayon Rondo can't shoot. But go ahead,
Don't disrespect Rayon and mention him.
Like, I came across, guys, the bottom dwellers of NBA point guards. You have Kemba Walker, Goran Dragic in Phoenix.
Earl
Watson, Jeremy Lin. I'm talking about starters. Jeremy Lin, Kemba Walker, Aaron Brooks. So if he's not better than those guys, then he would be the worst point guard in the NBA. And point guard.
Real talk, I'd take Jeremy Lin before I took him.
Okay.
Yeah.
And,
seriously?
Maurice Williams.
Jeremy Lin has one hand, though. Jeremy Lin.
That's not enough. That's not a lot coming from me, though. If Austin says that, then we got a problem. Because Austin.
I would take Jeremy Lin. Mike Conley only has one hand.
If you press Mike Conley, he can get past the half court line. Yo,
he's going to run by you.
Because he got handled.
Hey,
yo,
Jimmy,
if you hold the ball and tell him to run, he'll get past you too.
Is he better than Jeff Teague and Devin Harris?
He's not better than Devin Harris. Devin Harris is overrated and would be considered a bust because I at one point thought he was on the way to something special.
Is he better than Ramon Sessions?
He's comparable to Jeff Teague, but Jeff Teague.
Yo, y'all are pooping on this dude.
It's hard for me to take Jeff Teague seriously until you do some of his front teeth. But we spending way too much time on Mike Conley.
Oh, y'all straight pooped on Mike Conley Jr., man. That's crazy. Anyway, man, I'll move to the next birthday.
So did Joe Budden.
Yeah, he definitely did. Anyway, next birthday is one Desmond Tremaine Mason. Des Mason, 35 years of age. Be Austin, Des Mason.
Yo, he could jump real high and scored occasionally, and I really don't have much else other than that. I mean, the whole Thunder's under roster is young bulls for some reason.
Hey, y'all talked about people having one hand. Desmond Mason had no hand.
Yeah, he didn't have no hand.
But the thing was, I was a fan of dudes, though. I was a fan of his because he played hard at all times. Like Austin said, he could jump out the building. So, you know, if you get caught sleeping, you will get banged on. But, you know, what he couldn't do with his skill set, he made up for it in hustle. So even though I said he has no hands, I was a big fan of Desmond Mason, man.
Yo, Desmond Mason, some guys jump. Yo, Desmond Mason left the earth for a while.
He left earth.
He went into orbit, huh? Des Mason.
Man, he went to Oklahoma State. People don't know that he's an artist in his spare time. And he made a rap song called We Dem Hornets when he was playing with the New Orleans Hornets. And he was a slam dunk winner. And when I look at a guy like that at 6'5", 222, with all the bounce he had, like, he really didn't do anything in the league. Like, I'm kind of disappointed. Like, I look at, like, man, if I would have had that bounce, I'd have been an all-star, like, you know.
he couldn't dribble, though, Kel. You can't make the all-star game off alley-oops alone.
I know. That's what I'm saying. He should have worked on his game, man. Like, I was thoroughly disappointed in what he got out of his career coming out of college.
You know what he looks like a cat who probably all his life, including college, he probably had to play out of position because of his athleticism.
No, you're absolutely right. He didn't play on the perimeter until he got to the NBA.
Yeah, he probably played the four a lot, you know, because maybe where he's from, he might have been one of the bigger dudes, but he definitely jumped high enough to guard five. So I can see that.
Yo, check this out. Interesting stat. Like, in early in his career, he shot threes a little bit, so he shoot, like, 27%, 27%, 29%, 12%, 15%. And then for, like, his last 4 years, he just stopped shooting threes, like, 0, 0, 0. Or he didn't make any. It was kind of crazy. Shot 0%.
I'm like, yo, those numbers. Anyway, let's just move on. Here's the last birthday I want to bring to you guys. This is one John Stephen Young, a.k.a. Steve Young, turns 51.
My birthday! Yay!
Dev, Steve Young.
Steve Young, one of the most accurate quarterbacks that I've ever seen in my life. Steve Young had a lot of tools, you know, besides being accurate, besides being intelligent on the field. He also was, you know, an athlete. But he never confused the two, you know, to where he was running when it was unnecessary and, you know, putting himself out there. But I don't know, Steve Young, he's somewhere in the top 10 in my eyes of all-time quarterback.
Yeah, I was going to get to that. Be awesome. When I say Steve Young to you, what comes to mind?
Please, this is a personal plea from a Philadelphia Eagles fan, please come help us. However you see fit, man, please come help us, Steve.
I don't know that at this age, young man. Doc Beck.
Steve Young was a beast. People don't realize, but he started out in the USFL. He was a running quarterback, and nobody really wanted him. I think he even went down to Tampa Bay, backed up Joe Montana. Him and Montana didn't get along. And then when Joe would get hurt, he'd go in and, like, have, like, 120 QB ratings. Then when Montana left, he was just a beast, man. Dude was remember that run he had against the – was that the Rams? Always confused him and Roger Craig. Minnesota run, like, that was crazy. So, but he's aging well. I didn't expect him to be 51 already. Like, he must do, like, yoga and work out and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, he got out at the right time because he had those concussions. But before he knocked his whole brain out, he got out of the game.
Actually, Steve Young is one of the most accurate passes. I always, like, you know, fight with myself in terms of because I argue with myself at times and I always win. But in terms of where he ranks all time in that top 10, I actually like him as a broadcaster as well. He's very articulate. He's good at communicating, right. And he's better than a lot of former players who try to, you know, make the transition into broadcasting. But in terms of the top 10, because I've had arguments with people who think he's top 3, top 5. I don't see him there. But he would have to be in the top 10, top 10 to 15 guys who ever played the position. So, you know, very accurate, very mobile. And, you know, I'm glad that he got a chance to win a championship after, you know, Joe left. So that's my spiel on one Steve Young. You know, I'm a fan of his body of work, Paul. But, Dev, tell everybody what happened this past week while they were on the grind.
All right. While y'all were on the grind, it's brought to you by Bay Financial Services. Go to our website, worldroomsports.com. Click on the Bay Financial Services logo. Call them up. Get your money right. You don't want to be on an ESPN special. All right, fellas. Man, it's been a wild week, man. There was a British League rugby player who lost a testicle after a collision in the final match. This guy's name was Paul Wood. He had a collision in the English sports final at Manchester Old Trafford Stadium on Saturday. it was so bad that he played the rest of the match after this collision that basically caused him after the match to have one of his testicles removed. He even had jokes about it. He tweeted, what do you guys think? I'll let you know what he
tweeted. I saw his tweet. His tweet was just coming out of the hospital to go home, and I seriously felt like I've left something.
Yo, he also said, Jimmy, that his coach, Tony Smith, he said, Tony Smith did say in his pre-match team talk last night, your balls are on the line here, guys. I didn't think he meant literally. Like, he got jokes.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could lose a testicle, if I could just be that humorous about it, maybe eventually, but I'd be kind of traumatized
Here's the thing. I mean, the fact that his name is Paul Woods just makes the story that much crazier. I don't know if it's a pun intended, but word to my man John Cluck and Iron Solomon. I just can't see this happening, like, you know, and making light of it that way. You know, I mean, I take my gonads seriously, so I can't see, you know, making fun this way. But to each his own, you know,
he's 30 years old. He's a father of two. I guess he figured he was done, so he good.
Was he not wearing a cup? Like, you know how in football, you play football, you wear your cup. Well, like that's crazy, man. And
I mean, I'm sure in rugby, as rough as that is, Kill, I'm sure in rugby you had to have one on. But sometimes things get rough, man.
Yo, rugby is gangster. Have you ever watched rugby before?
Yo, rugby.
I've watched like 3 minutes of it.
Rugby is for different types of human beings. Not normal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no doubt. Rugby is
when you think about that and you keep that in mind, you realize, like, well, maybe that's why, because, you know, like you said, different type of dudes play rugby, so we shouldn't be that surprised by, you know, the stuff that this dude was tweeting. And even crazier news, after the Browns game, a father and his 22-year-old son were watching the Browns-Giants game at a Buffalo Wild Wings. Somewhere in Ohio. So they had a bet on the game, and I'm not really sure of the stakes in this bet, who bet on what, who bet on who, but it caused these two to step outside into the parking lot after the game. They had an altercation, and the father ended up getting stabbed in his leg with a pocket knife. Now, can you guys imagine anything in sports, any bet, that will cause you to stab your dad in his leg?
I blame the father to begin with, because if he was doing the job that he was supposed to, his son wouldn't pull a pocket knife out on him. So that's where we'll start.
Yo, my question is, when I read this whole story, unlike most people, the first thing I thought of is, who bet on the Cleveland Browns? Like, who bets on the Cleveland Browns? And, I mean, they actually rumbled before he got stabbed. The father took the son's hand and slammed it in the door, and the son punched him in the face. I mean, they was getting it in. But my thing is, who bets on the Cleveland Browns, for one? And, yo, this is just out of control, man. Like,
Maybe nobody betted on the Browns. Yeah, maybe it was like a prop bet. You know, how many yards this person would get. How many? I don't know. Maybe it was a fantasy football bet. I don't know. But if the father bet on the Browns, then he probably deserved to get stabbed in his leg. Point blank.
And Austin, you said you blame the father. I blame Brandon Whedon, because if not for him, this may not have happened, y'all.
Yeah, that's another place where culpability may lie. That's true.
Brandon Whedon. All right, so Dwight Howard is in the news again because, you know, he doesn't like to be quiet.
Yes.
Because of the whole feud between he and Shaq, he says he's done with Superman as his nickname, and he's leaning towards calling himself Iron Man.
Sir, I would like to, because I came up with some nicknames for, and I wanted to share with the show and our listeners.
Shoot, go ahead.
Atlanta Man, Rainbow Man, Sensitive Man, Tall, Tight, Tatted Man, Teddy Bear Man.
My question is this, though. Like, who gives themselves nicknames in the first place? I'm going to change my name from this to that. Why don't you just play ball, take care of your back, and try to win your first championship? Let the fans in L.A., you know, well, let them affectionately give you a nickname when you earn it. You know, like, come on,
War Room Nation, I'm officially changing my nickname. My new nickname is Pimp Daddy Hustle Stack Money. At Mac Daddy conventions, I get all the attention. And,
and you better call him that, or you get no love.
You know, I just want to say, this whole situation, yo, Shaq needs to cut it out, because Shaq's out of control, too. Like,
he should move
Shaq's
on.
In his way.
He should move
He needs
on.
To get over
he
it, man.
He should,
like,
but he's Shaq. And y'all know I don't even like Shaq.
Listen, you know,
Shaq.
I defend Shaq. I defend Shaq when Austin poops on him all the time, but this whole situation is out of control. Yo, he sat there and said that Robin Lopez is a better center than Dwight Howard. First off, he came back and was like, well, I meant to say Brooke, but I said Robin. But come on, man. Cut it out.
Were given a nickname while we were at the Blogs with Balls conference, the Hype Machine.
Yeah, but I like that nickname. But hold on, but let's get back to Shaq.
Yeah, but at least it was given to us. At least we earned it.
And it was given to us. We earned it. He's naming himself.
These two grown-ass men are arguing over a fictional character's nickname. Like, neither one of you made it up. No one gave it to you, nor did you make it up. Because, come on, man, cut it out. Both y'all need to cut it out. Y'all grown professional athletes.
If I shot one of y'all, y'all both going to die. So, you know, who's Superman really in this situation?
They both need to cut it out. Dwight needs to ignore him and play his game.
Yeah, I have a take because, and I'll take this from one, Skip Bayless. He said that maybe Dwight is doing this to lower the expectation because, as you know, Superman is invincible, Man of Steel, can't die. He can, you know, he can do everything. And Superman, if you went up against Iron Man would lose every time. And Iron Man is a human who just happens to be rich and smart and made a great suit.
All right.
So he's doing that so everybody can lower their expectations in L.A. So if he doesn't win
Yo,
a chip,
let's,
they won't say.
Let's keep it funky, man. Cut it out. That's looking way too much into it, man. Like, seriously, Skip. And I like Skip, but cut it out, man. That's too much. Like,
well, Skip will come up with a crazy elaborate excuse for the people that he likes. He gives people too much credit for thinking.
I just think that it's too much. It's too much about nothing, and they both need to calm down. Like Shaq needs to do his job, and you know, stop the hate. And Dwight, just like don't even pay him no attention. Just play ball. You play ball, everything will work itself out, man.
Now
play ball, dog.
When Shaq came out the game, if they had a good game, they were blowing somebody out. They would play the Superman theme music. So I don't know if the Lakers were going to do the same thing for Dwight. You know what I'm saying?
Well, Orlando did, and I thought it was kind of shameful on their part. To, you know what I'm saying? But whatever. You know, the Lakers might end up doing that. Iron Man got a theme song. They might go ahead and play that. But our last story while y'all want to grind this week is Orlando Cruz. He is the fourth-ranked featherweight in the WBO. He has become the first active boxer to publicly reveal that he is gay. He said, "I am a proud gay man." What do you think? What kind of backlash do you guys think? Like, especially since he's in such a brutal combat sport, you know, what kind of treatment, what kind of backlash do you think he'll get after making this announcement?
Prediction? Yes, prediction. Pain.
It's not a team sport, so it's a little different considering he's a boxer, you know what I mean? Like, he doesn't have,
right.
You know, I mean, he has his immediate team that he trains with or whatever, but I'm pretty sure they probably already knew. So,
right.
You know, unless he really was in the closet, but, you know,
so basically, Jim, you think it's a little easier to do that when you're in a single sport rather than having to come out into a locker room full of guys?
I think that's my personal opinion. If you're a boxer, if you're a MMA fighter, a golfer, it's a little different because if you're not really distracting the team.
Right.
You know,
I think football will be the hardest sport to come out and say that you're gay.
What happens to the next guy he loses to? I mean, the next guy that loses to him.
Or the next guy he beats. Yeah. Like,
yeah,
he's going to be ridiculed.
I
mean,
it was
kind of rough.
He made it harder for himself. Oh, go
Thank
ahead.
You.
No, I was going to say, I think he made it harder for himself because cats are going to train 27% harder now because, okay, I don't want to be the guy to lose to the openly gay boxer. So I think he made it harder for himself.
Yeah. I mean, personally, I think any professional athlete who comes out and says that he's gay makes it harder on himself. I think that's just by nature, you know. Not saying that it's right, but the fact that it makes it hard on them is the reason why people don't do this in the first place. Because I'm pretty sure there's a lot more gay people in sports, but we just don't know because, you know, sports is just too much of a macho thing. So you don't want to, you know, tip that scale. You don't want to come out and do that out of fear, basically. So
I applaud his being honest and definitely, I guess, takes a stern stomach to do what he's done. Shout out to Sid Ziegler of OutSports. He'll definitely be able to cover this a lot better than we will. I don't know what to say about this. I definitely feel the position of I'm not losing to an openly gay boxer. And I know that's wrong.
I mean, I hear y'all on that, but at the same time, it's like as a boxer, yo, you going in there and you're putting your life on the line literally when you fight. I don't know if you train, like, I don't think you could train harder because he's openly gay. I just don't see that. But, you know, I hear what
you're
saying.
How can you train harder than you train? I mean, if you're not training as hard as you can in the first place, then you don't need to be in that
sport.
You're
going to get blocked, knocked off anyway. But, I mean,
well, nah. I think in any type of training, like, you can try to take it to the next level, like, with the focusness of, like, nah, man, like, yo, there's no way. You know, a guy can go like, no way. So they might do something extra. They might train even further. They may take their diet even a little bit more stricter. You understand? Like, because
uh-huh.
they don't want their
then
they
probably
to be like,
then they'll probably overtrain and they'll definitely be the first to get their ass kicked out of
the game. I totally get what you're saying. And we got a couple comments. The season ticket in our chat room is saying the backlash may be bigger for the next boxer he puts the ass whooping on. And then she said also, in general, there are still people who are ignorant to the gay HIV connection, and they think that may cause a slight issue if he starts bleeding in the ring. Monica brought up.
He might lose fights because of it.
Boxers can actually refuse to fight him. If you're in a team sport, you know, the opposing team can't refuse to play you, but it may hurt in terms of him trying to schedule matches. So that's something else I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, that's what right before you said it, I was like, he could probably lose matches because of that. But, yeah, like Austin said, you know, we actually met somebody at the Blogs with Balls conference up in Toronto this weekend who has the first openly gay sports media blog and, you know, company. And we plan to have him on our show, and this is one of the issues that we'll probably bring up when we have our Homosexuality in the Locker Room Part 2 show. First one we had back late 2010. Y'all can go back in the archives and listen to that. You know how we do it here in the War Room. But that's what happened this week, family, while y'all were on the grind. B. Austin, you want to tell everybody how they can get in touch with us real quick, brother?
Absolutely. Thank you. Check out our website at warroomsports.com. While you're there, be sure to sign up for the War Report, our weekly newsletter. Click on the Contact Us tab to send a message to us about our company, our show, or to inquire about sponsorship and advertising opportunities. For general inquiries, email us at info@warroomsports.com. While you're browsing the site, click on the memorabilia tab to buy War Room Sports merchandise, and then click on the blog tab to read our latest sports articles in the All's Fair in Sports and War blog. Then click the respective icons to like our Facebook page or to follow us on Twitter, to subscribe to our iTunes podcast, and to download our free War Room Sports mobile apps for your Android and Apple devices. Watch our videos at War Room Sports TV. Join the JW Philly Royalty chat room right now during the show at blogtalkradio.com/the War Room. To get into the chat room, just sign up for a free profile on blogtalkradio.com. If you don't want to create an account, you can sign in through your Facebook or Twitter accounts. While you're at it, click follow to make the War Room one of your favorite Blog Talk Radio shows. In fact, it should be your only Blog Talk Radio show. You'll get updates and reminders about the show. We'll be taking questions and reading posts from Facebook, Twitter, and the chat room every week during the show. To call in and speak with the host, dial the Digital Extreme Technologies hotline at 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. Pressing 1 is like raising your hand, so raise your hand. We may just call on you. What's going on in the chat room, fella?
Just talking about the last subject we brought up in the grind about the gay boxer. We're going to go ahead and move on to some hot topics. Hot topics are brought to you by Audible. Is your schedule too hectic to read as much as you want? Well, try audiobooks and kick back and let someone else do the reading for you. All you have to do is visit Audible and sign up for your free trial at audibletrial.com/warroomsports. In no time, you can be listening to the latest bestsellers, hands-free, stress-free, while getting other things done at the very same time. NHL earlier in the week, late last week, they went ahead and canceled the first 2 weeks of the season. So, you know, the lockout just got real. You know, we spoke about that this weekend with a panel of hockey media and hockey experts. Not really looking good for the league right now, but that's just a mention. The MLB playoffs are underway. As we speak, the Nationals and St. Louis Cardinals are locked up 1-1, bottom of the eighth. This is game 4, and the Nationals are down 2-1. They could go home tonight if they blow this tie that they got working for them right now. Cincinnati, who was tied with Washington for the best record in baseball, just lost today in Game 5, 6-4, to the Giants. Now, Jimmy, we've seen this happen, like, the last few years in baseball. I mean, last year the Phillies had a franchise record, 102 wins, lost in the first round. You know, Washington's on the brink right now. They have the best record in baseball. They're on the brink of losing in four games. Cincinnati lost in five, tied for the best record in the majors. Like, what is it about, you know, the postseason? I mean, is it the old adage that it's not how good you are, it's how good you're playing at a particular time?
I think that's a big part of it. In terms of Washington, maybe they shouldn't have shut your man down and he could be still playing, but that's another story. But
great point.
They're going to get second guess for that if they lose this game tonight. They're going to get second guess big time.
Absolutely, and that's why I hope they do. I mean, the Expos have had a good season, but if the Expos do lose, they will get second guess for it. And, you know, that might be the reason why I hope they lose. Cause I know some
they might actually get third guess if that's possible, Jim, because they already they've already been second guess and they haven't even lost.
More
yet,
or less. I mean, so that's why I want to see this thing blow up and see what happens if, you know, they do actually heat up. But, I mean, you see it all the time. It's like, that's what's so great about sports is when you have parity and it's just a matter of getting to the second season, so to speak. I mean, you see wild card teams in the NFL win the Super Bowl. Just get to the playoffs and whatever happens, happens. You know what I mean? And that's the great thing about sports. But at the same time, it makes you think, like, we play 182 games, and I mean 162 games. I'm sorry, 162 games, and 82 in basketball. And it's like, yo, you feel kind of crazy losing in the first round.
I know, like you do all of that, you know, you make this history, like in the Nationals' case, and you know they could possibly go out tonight in four games. So basically, you play four more games this season than the bum teams in the league. But the Yankees are up 2-1 on the Orioles, another feel-good story this year. Game four of that series is at 7:30 tonight. You got a game five at 9:30, Detroit versus Oakland. This has been a pretty good series. But back to that Cincinnati-San Francisco series. You know, they went to San Francisco, won two games, went home, and had to win one out of three games at home. And they couldn't do it. They got closed out at home three straight. Like, that's – what about the home field advantage in baseball? Do you think, you know, do you think that matters? Or you just think, you know
– Not at all.
It's funny you say that because I was reading – we have a blog that was actually posted today, and it brought up about how baseball has the biggest home field advantage in any other sport.
Right.
And it made me think about that when I was looking at how the playoffs were shaping up, and then I was looking at, you know, the article was written by Gus Griffin. And he said, in baseball, the home team gets the last at bat. And, you know, there's really no structural home field advantage in any other sport when you look at how it's compared to baseball, so to speak. So I haven't really thinking about that when you see that that is the case, but it doesn't seem to be – you know, helping anybody.
Well,
in terms
he did throw that adjective in there. Structural home field advantage. It is structured for the home team to have an advantage, but you know, whether that happens or not, hey, we don't know. The other sports aren't even structured that way because the game starts with a coin toss. You know what I'm saying?
But how often do you see it where it's not how good you are, what your record is, it's how you're playing at the time.
Yeah, I mean that's for a lot
of football
sports
all the time.
Yep. The last
football all the time.
Shoot, the Giants were not last year. The first time they won, they were a wild card. Last year, with their record, they might as well have been a wild card. Besides the fact that the NFC East stunk, and you can win the division with the record they had. Green Bay, when they won the Super Bowl, they were a wild card. The Steelers were a wild card in one of their runs. So. It happens, but we'll see how this plays out in the MLB. We'll see if the Nationals can keep their hopes alive tonight. And speaking of baseball, we just wanted to say congrats to Armin Gould, who is he plays in all of our fantasy leagues. He's a loyal War Room Sports follower. He won our Fantasy Baseball League, which, man, I can't even front, fellas. The baseball season's so long, I forgot we had a Fantasy Baseball League. but he won, so congrats to you, Armin. We will be sending your $50 restaurant gift card in the mail as soon as possible. We'll see what you do in the football league. Now, I do know about that because I'm actually in it. Let's go to the NBA for a quick minute, fellas, because there's been one
speaking
story
of that real quick, Dev, huh? Real quick.
Go ahead.
I just want you to know that I'll play you this week in our fantasy league, and you're going to get that work.
Look at me, King.
All right. Y'all,
anyway, go ahead.
Y'all heard him. Y'all heard it here first, because we're going to report next week on what happened. And when I win by 65 points, I want to hear
it. Might bye week for the beast. Go ahead, though.
I know, right? Somebody screened that, too.
No doubt.
There's been two people in the NBA. I'd say one fairly respected, one highly respected. And the topic has been LeBron James versus Michael Jordan. Charles Barkley said, he was the one who said it first, that he believes that LeBron James, when it's all said and done, he could possibly surpass Michael Jordan as the greatest player of all time. I mean, first of all, Michael Jordan being the greatest player of all time is subjective. That's Charles Barkley's opinion, but it's a lot of people's opinion. A lot of people, from what I saw, really didn't take Chuck too serious because he's Chuck. But then a few days later, Phil Jackson came out and said something that was pretty much similar, saying that with the tools that LeBron has, he could possibly equal or surpass Michael in the, you know, history of NBA greats. What do you guys think? Bayon, do you think it's possible that LeBron James could, you know, when it's all said and done, be better than Michael Jordan?
I think, honestly, I think that window closed. But
already?
I think it closed only because of, like some people said, what he did. Like, I think game-wise, he can become probably just as good as Michael Jordan, but that's going to take a lot of work, working on his footwork, his jump shot, fadeaway, post-game, his drive. I mean, he closed out for the first time in a series, like, I guess, for a championship level this year. But I think it closed because once he said, you know, I need to go hook up with Wade and Bosh, I think that took a little bit off the legacy that he could have had. Now, had he stayed in Cleveland and added all this, won about three or four chips, then you're like, whoa, this dude could be the greatest ever. Because
you know
we'll always say, MJ didn't do that. That's what we'll always
say. It's funny that you said that, because that is a very good point. Because I actually came on here ready to defend LeBron, because the whole thing that they were speaking of was potential. You know, Charles Barkley didn't say he was better than Michael Jordan. Phil Jackson didn't say he was better than Michael Jordan. But they spoke about potential down the line, and it seemed like a lot of the people that we speak to on an everyday basis really didn't understand that point. But the point you made, that does carry a lot of weight with me, because when it's all said and done, besides your level of skill, your level of production, there's more that adds to your legacy. And I think it will hurt him in a lot of people's eyes that he decided to leave a situation, you know, and go to one that made it a little bit easier. But as far as being a better player, let's take that out of the mix, right, for a second. And I'm pretty sure, you know, it's really impossible to take it out of the mix because it happened. Let's just imagine it never happened. I think certainly he could possibly end up better than Michael Jordan. Size, speed, skill level, the fact that he's only, what, 27 years old right now, and he has a lot of basketball ahead of him, and he gets better every single year, I think it's possible, but it's like blasphemous when you say anything, you know, in that regard towards Michael Jordan, somebody
well,
be better than him.
Before Austin poo-poos on him, let me say what I got to say. And that, you know,
y'all
want to
close out with
say,
a great one. All
right. what I'm saying is this, though. Just like, first off, why is Michael Jordan the benchmark? But that's a whole other argument. But in terms of him being better than Michael, I always thought that he had the potential, even when I first saw. I mean, this guy had Michael Jordan's athleticism and skills with the passing ability of Magic Johnson and the size. Pause that, please. But it's
Karl
like,
Malone.
Yeah, he was built like Karl Malone, passing ability of like Magic. Yo, it's like LeBron was made in the lab.
But hold up, Jimmy. I don't think he has Magic's passing ability. He's not. No. Like, nobody has ever passed like Magic. LeBron hasn't done anything like Magic.
Listen, what I, Listen,
he's just the kind of benchmark you use. I don't think Jimmy's saying he's just as good of a passer as Magic.
No,
or
I wouldn't say anybody's just as good as Magic.
Somebody passing
I
think that's the
name that stuff
you come
was magic.
Up with.
Like, that stuff was literally like Magic.
Yeah.
I'm saying is, you know, I'm always going outside with Magic. Magic is the great. Anyway, let's not get into
Brian's
that.
A hell of a passer,
is,
though.
They like
Stockton.
Like, he's just as good a passer as Stockton or somebody.
LeBron looks like he was made in the lab. It's not real. Like, he has this ability and his athleticism and size. I think that he could be. I think he still can be better than Michael. But what's going to happen is Michael Jordan has fans and people that will never admit that anybody was just as good or if not better than him. And the fact that LeBron went to Miami is what they're going to hold over his head. The same way people don't want to give Kobe his props. He played with Shaq and now he plays with Gasol. You're going to have the same thing with LeBron. LeBron could win 7 rings. And what's going to happen is they're going to say, he went to Miami. And, you know, so that's going to happen. And this is the great thing about basketball, because these arguments about who's the greatest will last forever, because there are people right now who tell you that Wilt can't be touched and, you know, Magic can't be. So, you know, it's the great thing about hoops.
And they don't know, like Jimmy said, they don't know who's cooking up in the lab right now to say that somebody will never be touched. I mean, my son going to have games,
right now.
So, you know, the argument is going to continue in about 18
There's somebody
years.
Being created right now that's better than LeBron and Mike. It's probably being made in Google Labs, but.
Google making it.
Listen, let me lay this to rest.
Oh,
first
God.
And foremost, Michael Jordan had a problem. And it's evident now that he's away from playing aspect of basketball. That same problem, Kobe has a little bit of it, and it's kind of what made him great. LeBron doesn't have the character flaws and the mental issues that can be translated into that killer obsession with winning that Mike and Kobe had. LeBron James is concerned with being the greatest sports brand and first billionaire athlete. Does he want to win titles? Yeah, I'm sure he does. Does he want to be great? Yeah, I'm sure he does. I probably would say he already feels as though he's great. And he has made it to a level where greatness is arguably he's a top 20 player of all time. I mean, I think that argument is fairly strong. The thing that made Mike, once you go beyond the talent, the athleticism, yo, he would rather die than lose. The dude was addicted to the thrill of winning. And I don't see that obsession with LeBron, which is why he's willing to go to Miami and team up with two other Hall of Famers. Listen.
If LeBron goes out from this point on, And I'm not even with the, you know, a lot of people, when we posted this on our Facebook page, a lot of people went straight to the rings. I don't think ring count makes you, you know, better than this player, you know, and I'm pretty sure I can fairly say that you guys don't believe in that whole theory either.
I think it's a fair argument.
Yeah, but from what all you're saying, what if LeBron goes out, now this is fantasy, from this point on, averages a triple-double for the next 3-4 seasons. Like, just because Mike is obsessed with winning, that doesn't mean that you can't make a case for, you know, somebody that's producing on a level may produce that in the future. Like, there's just certain things, like, when he's only halfway through his career, I can't see how the case can be closed on this.
Well, I don't think the case is totally closed, Devin. But, again, one of the things you pointed to now is what if he goes out and averages a triple-double? What if he goes out and gets his Oscar Robertson on? I feel that, but I think the things that make Jordan Jordan and put him in that esteem is everything. It's a total picture. It's totality.
The intangibles?
So the numbers are important, but the defining moments. In the defining moments when it was time to put the ice pick in the chest, and pulled down, yo, Mike was cool with that.
You also have to look at highlight reels, ESPN, you know, film companies, because even though we all have seen with our own eyes that LeBron doesn't fully have that, I guarantee you somebody can put together a highlight reel right now that will make somebody who didn't know about any of this think something totally different.
Well, and I feel that in the fluff, you know, you'll always be able to
so we
fluff
can,
things.
You know,
but the fact
we know what Mike
fluff,
did, but let's not
be,
act like
it
wasn't
have to be
exaggerated a little bit.
That would be contrived. So you even though
like,
you have
well, here's my point.
Because if you look at all five of those Jordan videos,
hey,
that's front like it's not the same highlights on all of the videos.
Hey, PJ, what's your opinion, homie? PJ, let PJ drop some jewels. What's your opinion?
Kind of a combination of everything that's been said a little bit, because I understand what Brad's saying in terms of it's like those defining moments as well as the intangibles, and it's the intangibles that create those defining moments because of the type of person that Jordan was.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when you look at the statistics, I think tangibly, like his physical skill is better than Jordan right now. I mean, when you consider the size and the things that he can do with the basketball, things he can do defensively, I honestly think that is better than what Jordan had. But Jordan overcame some of the things that he didn't have to put him in the level that he's in. So I think, honestly, it's still open. I think he possibly can. I don't think he'll ever be that killer like Jordan was, because I don't think that's his mentality. But I think as he if he continues to win with this team, I think it's going to build his confidence. And I think as you go along and you get in those fourth quarter situations, he may start to feel more comfortable. Like, I don't think he's ever going to be the assassin, but I think he may be a little bit more comfortable than we saw him the first time he was in, you know, when he was with Miami and just kind of, you know, disappeared in that first time they were in the finals. So
yeah.
I think he can be, man. I don't think it's as blasphemous as I thought it may have been like 4 years ago.
Yeah.
BJ, like, he might not be the assassin, but he might get a couple double murders.
Can we do a poll question? Hey, Jimmy, can we do a poll question? I would like to know. Now, I don't think LeBron would ever get to this point. But the thing is, if you had to pick one NBA player right now in any era to start a team, who would it be, each of us? And I'll start off. I'll say I'll pick Michael Jordan.
Well, let me ask, hold before you go there. Kill, the question I was going to ask is close to that. I was going to say take both these guys in their prime. And which one would you take if we're picking? And Kamal, who's in our chat room, you can answer this as well because he's weighing in our chat room. And also the season ticket. Everybody in the chat room can let me know. If in their prime, if these were the only two guys you could take to start, who would you take if you're picking the team?
And you don't have any other players. You don't have any other players yet. This is the first person you're picking, right?
You're starting from scratch, and
yeah,
these guys are the two best in their prime.
Well,
Gil said he would take Jordan to start a whole team with.
Yeah.
It depends on what knowledge you're given with that. If I'm just looking at a draft sheet and I'm looking at attributes, then of course it would be LeBron. But if you can tell me that Michael Jordan was going to be what he eventually became to basketball, then I would probably have to take him.
No, they're in their prime.
So it depends on how you're.
You know everything you know up to Jordan being in his prime and up to LeBron being in his prime.
Because Jordan is going to be.
Does anybody think LeBron has reached his prime? Has LeBron reached his prime?
See, I'm not trying to be all super technical with the question, but it's still kind of like semantics because you're like, who would you use to start your team? Like, I still might take LeBron to start my team. I might get some other killers on the team like they have in Miami. You know, I might get a Dwayne Wade. Now, if you're asking me who would I get to just straight up be the man on the team, then I'd probably go Mike. But to start a team, I'm looking to be smart starting a team as far as getting as much as I can all around. You know, he's a passer. You know, he likes to get other people involved. So if I can put a smart enough team around him, I might end up with a better team. But if we just
and
talk
it's tough,
about,
like you said, it's tough, like you said, Dev. It's tough not to be too technical because I'm thinking like if you would kind of say LeBron because he can do so many things. Like you can put him in different places probably more than you could put Jordan in terms of positions and guarding people.
Yeah.
But at the
I
same
think I'm
time,
going
Jordan,
too deep with the question.
Yeah, but then at the same time, Jordan may be able to get more out of lesser players than LeBron could. Now, LeBron, don't get me wrong. LeBron is probably a better facilitator. He is a better facilitator, but I'm talking about in terms of you know what Jordan does, you know what Kobe does with players and getting the most out of them. So that's another attribute.
And
I mean,
LeBron,
again,
PJ, might he sometimes facilitates in times when you don't want him to facilitate.
Right. Damn,
can I ask you a question? Because we're going
on level
the
of fear that nobody, like LeBron, will never be able to have the level of fear that Jordan had on the biggest stage and always came through.
I'm not a Frankie.
I guess so. Mike didn't have to deal with social media and some of the different things that LeBron. Never mind. I'm not going to get that deep into it. But the bottom line is, I don't think
Jimmy don't like Mike.
No. Listen. Mike is in my top ten of all time. I'm just saying that.
What's top five now?
Damn, man.
Hold up. If you're in my top five, doesn't that mean you're also in my top ten? I'm just saying, you know. Anyway.
Yeah, but I bet you. I bet that.
No, but I just don't like the fact that when we
Jimmy
talk hoops, it's like Mike is untouchable. You know what I'm saying? Like, to me, this question isn't that crazy as some people make it sound. It's like when you talk about, like, you had – like, it's just known fact that Mike's the greatest. I just disagree with that. And
some of the stuff that we're giving LeBron credit for, I haven't seen consistently. And in the age of being prisoner of the moment, like his post game. Okay, he did show more aggression in the post, but we're less than 24 months away from him not being able to post up someone.
Which one of us gave him that shot?
J.J. Barrett.
Yo,
who in this discussion gave him that credit for three years of torture rack work?
Hold up. Well,
who in this conversation gave him that credit?
LeBron can post up. He just doesn't do it. But that's a joke. But listen, though, Austin, the same way you hate LeBron, too, though.
I don't hate LeBron. I only hate one human being on this earth.
If I took clips from our show, I probably could make about a good hour of you slandering LeBron over the last couple of years.
Exactly. He can hit you. He can edit up your clips, make you look like you hate LeBron, just like they can edit up LeBron's clips and make him look like an assassin out on the court in the fourth quarter. You can do anything with highlights, though. You can do anything with highlights.
As much as you disrespect, as much as you dislike Donovan F. McNabb,
you hated
LeBron on the...
No,
you
I hate
LeBron
no,
the show more
I
than
hate
him.
No, I hate Donovan.
Yeah, you hate him.
Now LeBron, I don't hate LeBron, man.
And I think part of it is people compare him to Mike, and you're a Mike Stanley, so.
I have no problem with that. People compare Kobe to Mike. It is what it
you
is.
You hated him for a long time. You hated Kobe till he dropped 81.
True.
This is true.
You know what I'm saying? So, you know.
And now, what I think one thing that we can never measure, and we can only have history to do that, is like that intangible of when the game was on the line or when Mike was in the building, like everybody bowed down. Even if the cats didn't want to bow down, they had to bow down. Zeke didn't want to bow down. Magic didn't want to bow down, but they had to give it to him. Like,
you're definitely,
this is the man.
You're definitely right about that. And I do think, I do lean more towards the notion that when it is all said and done, that's going to be the thing that separates them. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I don't disagree with that at all. I think that'll be the thing that ultimately separates them when it comes down to it. But we'll see how it plays out because dude probably has another good 10 years in the league, you know, if his body holds up.
You think Jordan still be running the Bobcats into the ground in 10 years?
Yeah.
Nah. He probably would have sold that to us by then. he definitely would have sold that to us. Let's go. We got a few more topics here, Jim, but let's go, since we got Mike B on the line, let's let Mike B do his picks, and then we'll get back to this before our guest comes on. So how about we do it like that? So real quick, everybody, of course, you can check out our website at warroomsports.com to call in and speak with us about any of today's topics. Dial the Digital Extreme Technologies hotline at 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk and call in and get at Jimmy about MJ being in his top 10 of all time. So go ahead, Jim. Let's get our handicap on real quick, and then we'll go back to some hot topics.
No doubt. I'll bring them on. Let's see. Mike B.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
Oh, man. We're pretty good. Pretty good. How you doing, Mike?
Mike B., we ready to get some money, man.
Hey, I'm doing good, guys, but I have to chime in on this Jordan LeBron James real quick because I grew up in the 1980s when I saw Jordan fight through the Pistons, when you could hand check, when you could throw the players on the ground, and there weren't any of these flagrant fouls. Michael Jordan was the most self-determined, biggest world player I've ever seen in my life in any sport. And
right.
He's 6-for-6 in championships. Every game, guys, was life and death to him. He didn't take games off. I mean, the one year they went 72-10, you know, the best record of all time. I see LeBron taking games off here and there. So in my book, guys, there is no Michael. There is no one that compares to Michael Jordan. Championships, will to win, you name it.
That's a great point you brought up in terms of how the game was played. But I guess the question was, does he have the potential to, you know, because there's a lot of things that we haven't seen yet. We don't know what's going to happen in the future in terms of what LeBron can do, what he can put together. So,
yeah,
because,
Mike,
you just don't,
for
you
the
just
most
don't think
part,
it's possible.
Yeah, for the most part, most of us are on board with everything you said because we grew up in the Michael Jordan era as well. So, you know, for most of us, he's the greatest player that we've seen. You know, but at this point, you know, I just try to be objective and kind of leave it open because, like Jimmy just said, we have no idea what the future is going to hold. And this guy is really talented. And I mean, and if you've listened to our show, the progression of our show in the last 2 years, I mean, there's probably a lot of people who are listening right now who are, like, shocked to hear us even say anything positive about LeBron James. But, you know, you kind of got to, he's a talented I don't know if I think he'll ever catch him. But I'm going to give him a nod on potential. Like, it could happen somehow.
Yeah, you know, guys, he got his championship. So, you know, I was with you guys. Until he got his championship, I was his hardest critic. But when you win the championship and you break through that barrier, you know, you have to give him credit then. You know what I'm saying?
And now the pressure's off. So who knows how he'll come back this year without that pressure. You know, he may relax and get – you just never know what can happen. So – with that being said, Mike, let me ask you a question. Last week you gave us St. Louis +1 and the Steelers -3.5.
Yeah, 1-1, guys. 1-1. That Steeler game kind of hurt me. The Steelers were winning 13-0 in that game, and the Eagles came back, you know, took the lead, lost it late, but I didn't get over the cover. That St. Louis game pretty much was an easy win for me. They, on the Thursday night, they won 17-3,
yeah.
So I covered that game pretty easy.
Yeah.
And, you know, guys, my biggest game of this weekend, I'm going right back to St. Louis again. I'm going to recommend everybody takes them. They're playing at Miami, and Miami's a 3.5-point favorite. The thing here is, guys, is Miami is a really good team against the spread when they're getting points, but they're in a kind of different position now where they're actually a favorite. So
right.
I think, you know, I just think they're not used to being in that position. And I think St. Louis, guys, I'm high on this team. They're actually 4-1 this year against the spread. So I'm going to recommend that everyone take St. Louis +3.5.
You think Jeff Fisher is that good of a coach that he just turned him around?
Whoa.
Huh?
Sorry to interrupt, but Jason Wirth just hit a home run in the bottom of the ninth to walk the Nets off to a 2-1 win.
Wow.
I'm sorry,
Greg. But Mike, do you think that Jeff Fisher is really that good of a coach? Because it looks like he got them playing some good ball.
I think he is, and guys, I think when you look ahead in the future, they have all those draft picks that they got from Washington for Robert Griffith. I think when you look ahead, this team is just going to get better and better. So yeah, I'm with you. I like Fisher as a coach. You know what he did in Tennessee. And I just think the future is bright. I think St. Louis, you know, I think they could even go 9-7 this year possibly. You know, I don't know if they're going to make the playoffs, but they're going to be solid.
Wow. Okay. So what else you got for us?
One last game, guys. Right in the NFL, Cincinnati's visiting Cleveland, and Cincinnati right now is a 1.5-point favorite. I think I got to pick Cincinnati here, guys. I mean, Cleveland's 0-5. You know, Cincinnati had a tough loss against Miami. But I just can't see how you can back Cleveland. You know, they haven't done anything the last few years. They're already 0-5. You know, I think Cincinnati, it's a big game for them. You know, division game, and they're coming off a loss. So I think Cincinnati covers that 1.5 points.
Okay, so we have St. Louis -3.5 and Cincinnati -1.5. What'd you say?
Yep. So St. Louis +3.5. They're getting 3.5.
Oh, wow, they're getting 3.5. Yeah, I actually kind of like that, too. But and Cincinnati's -1.5, right?
Yes.
Okay, so we got St. Louis +3.5 and Cincinnati -1.5. All right, cool. So We'll see how this fares this week. Any college games for us, or you're laying off that this week?
I'm only a college guy, but I can't wait for the NBA, because if there's one thing I hang my hat on, it's predicting the NBA games, because I love the NBA more than anything else. And, you know, this season I'll be calling in, you know, with some NBA picks. Last season I was about 65%, guys. So it's a great time of year. You know, NBA's coming up. We got the baseball playoffs, and NFL, you know, is in full swing.
Yeah, we absolutely, you know, love hoops as well. We're huge hoops guys. So we're looking forward to it, you know, to this season, especially with all the changes being made with, you know, guys going to different teams. So we're all excited about the NBA.
I'll give you guys a quick prediction. The Celtics are taking down the Heat this year and coming out of the East. I don't know if they can beat the Lakers, because I think with Dwight Howard, a motivated Dwight Howard in L.A., they're going to be tough to beat. But I think the Celtics take down the Heat this year, guys.
Wow, the season ain't even started, and you're already giving us predictions.
All right. That's a bold one. That's a bold one. Mike, just tell everybody, you know, how they can find you, as usual.
Sure. You guys can find me at cswins.net. My name there is Your Bookie's Money. I have packages daily, weekly, season-long football packages. I'll be getting into the NBA here soon. And I have a new show here on Blog Talk Radio. It's on tomorrow morning, 11 a.m. Eastern time. It's called Bang the Book. And I am going to have a special guest, Willie Williams, the ex-Pittsburgh Steeler cornerback. You know, he's in the Super Bowl, two Super Bowls, one against the Cowboys, and then with 10 years later against Seattle. So he'll be my guest. We'll have him handicap some games with us, and that's about all I got, guys.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks, Mike. We look forward to the season coming up and hearing from you, you know, for the rest of the NFL season.
Thanks, Mike.
Okay, guys. Sure. I love the show, guys. You take care.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks. Take care, Mike.
Sure.
All right, so, you know, we still have a few minutes before our guest comes on, so we can get back into some of these hot topics. That Jordan-LeBron debate is only going to heat up as the years go on, so we'll keep an eye on that. Austin, Jimmy, you guys want to do a quick recap of our trip up to Toronto this weekend? You want to give a few shout-outs? You know, not to everybody.
Oh, man, I'd absolutely love to. I think we first have to shout out Don, HHR Media, for putting the whole Blogs with Balls event together. You know, it's billed as the leading sports digital media conference, and I think it lives up to that billing. I had a great time, met some of the cutting edge bloggers and analysts in the business, and I had a great time there. Jimmy.
Yeah, I just wanna send a shout out to everybody, you know, Craig, Earl, Jaja. No, I'm joking. But no, seriously though. I wanna send a shout out to everybody up there. I had a ball, you know, got to chill in Canada, eat some poutine, and you know, got to meet some of the best minds in the some of the best minds in sports media. And you know, interact with them, and you know, and get to spread the war room gospel, because that's what we do. So we had a great time there, definitely. And also got to see how cheap they're selling Raptors tickets, because the Raptors completely blow. So
selling,
you
they tried to give them
get season tickets to the Raptors
while we were eating lunch. Like, the waitress came out with some tickets.
Yeah, they're trying to give us season tickets just for getting an order of fries in the restaurant. Like,
we had courtside because we spent more than $10 at the real court.
So the Raptors, you know, they got some work to do there, but you know, I had a good time. You know, so shout out to everybody we met there, the ESPN personalities, Yahoo Sports, NBC, everybody.
Yeah, it was a really good. Good experience, very informative. Networking opportunities were second to none. And just like we tell you every time we come back from somewhere else, everything we learned there, all the contacts we made there, is only going to make us that much better, so we can give a much better product to you guys. So like they said, shout out to everybody at Blogs with Ball 5. I hope y'all do it again next year, because War Room Sports will be right back.
We will be Blogging with Ball 6.
So, hey, you know, Roger Goodell, he altered some of the bounty gate penalties. For some reason, he altered Scott Fujita's penalty. He took that down to seven games instead of 8 games. Jonathan Vilma, his punishment stands. Now, do you guys, you know, what's your theory on that? Like, why hasn't Vilma's punishment changed in comparison to some of the other guys?
Disrespectful.
I mean, seriously, do you think it's because maybe he was a ringleader in this whole thing as far as the players are concerned?
I mean, I think that has to be it. The whole process, to me, is just utterly ridiculous. But with that being said, you know, he has been one of the more vocal, you know, detractors of Roger Goodell, and has said some things that, you know.
So what you're saying is personal.
I mean,
there were four players.
You have to say that you can't take things personal, but we're all human beings. And, you know, there's no way that couldn't have factored into this.
But
yeah, I mean, there were four players who got penalized, and everybody's got reduced, you know, be it by one game, but his didn't get reduced at all. PJ, what do you think?
Now, hasn't it been, like, I don't know, rumored or in the document or intimated that Vilma was somebody that was walking around with the 10 stacks and supposedly put it on the table and said, like, I forgot what, I think it was a quarterback, that this quarterback is taken off. So do you think that had anything to do with it?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying.
Because, I mean,
they
said that he was like the guy with the money, kind of.
Yeah, he was like a ringleader as far as the players are concerned. That's why his punishment was bigger than theirs in the first place.
But then why didn't he get reduced? Yeah, I see what you mean.
I mean,
I don't know, man. I think it was personal a little bit, too.
Yeah, they didn't have any public beef with Goodell, but Goodell and Vilma have kind of been going back and forth in the media and in the meetings and stuff like that. So, yeah, you guys are right. Personal feelings may have gotten involved a little bit.
I think one of the big issues with this is because a football player's career is so short, I mean, taking a season away really hampers his earning power. Now, the good news for him is they're not, the suspension isn't going to run into next season, so it's just the remainder of this season. So the 5 games that he was on the PUP list, physically unable to perform due to the injury, he did get paid for those.
Right, okay. So it might also be a situation where if he's only reducing these other guys 1 game, I guess he's figuring if he's suspended for the season, what's the point? What's the point of reducing his, you know,
1 game?
He played 1 out of 6.
He played the last game of the year.
and by the looks of it, week 17 will be their last game of the year.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I think also he's the only player at this point that is willing to or has shown the gumption and intestinal fortitude to go against Roger Goodell in a legal manner and actually make some headway with that, you know, getting things appealed, getting things pushed back. Now he's received some of his cash back, and Goodell's probably like, oh, no, buddy, like, I'm not going to, you know. Now I think that gives hope to other players in the future to say, you know what, we can win against Goodell. So.
Hey, guys, we have our guest on.
Okay, we'll get to our guests in about 2 minutes, everybody. So spread that word if you want to tune in to hear Rahel. You can do that in about 2 minutes. Real quick, staying on the topic of the New Orleans Saints, how big do you think Drew Brees' record was the other night? He now holds the record with 48 straight games with the touchdown pass, breaking Johnny Unitas' record of 47. How
scale
big
of,
do you guys
scale of 1 to 10. Scale of 1 to 10, 10 being big, 1 being not big at all, I would go with a 6.
Really?
Because context around that, QBs drop back a lot more now and throw a lot more than they did. So I think going forward, the record will have less and less impact.
Yeah, Austin has a 6. I personally have it at like a 3 for some of the same reasons. And then when you factor in the fact of the Saints offense.
I was trying to be nice, Jimmy.
Yeah, when you look at the Saints offense,
when do we
factor
do that?
In with factored in with what Austin said, I think it's not that impressive. I mean, it's impressive, but, you know, it's not a big deal.
You know, it was
offense
a record.
Is Andy Reid's dream.
It was a record that a lot of analysts debated this week because a lot of people are looking at it as such a big record because Johnny Unitas held it, you know, blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, a lot of these analysts seem like they hadn't even heard of the record before Drew Brees approached it. So I'm like, how big is the record if it was a record that you really didn't even know about before? Of course, there are a lot of people in hindsight are saying, yeah, I knew about the record, but it didn't seem like anything that got broadcast that much, maybe because nobody ever came close to it. So
the way he carried on after he set the record was ridiculous.
Yeah, but you guys stay tuned because we might have a giveaway in the coming weeks that's related to that record, something that you guys would like, but we're not going to announce it until we know it for sure. So right now we're actually going to bring our guest on the line so we can talk a little bit about the social side of sports. Our guest is the founder of UrbanCuffs.com, which is an online publication that's becoming wildly popular in the past year or so. She also just won the Impact DC 2012 Leader of the Year Award, and we're going to bring her on right now and find out how it feels to be the 2012 Leader of the Year. Rahel, are you on the line?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
You are in the war room. Thank you. Thanks for joining us tonight. We really appreciate it.
Oh, it's exciting. We've been talking for a long time, so it's finally great to have a public conversation.
Yes, yes, yes. So we're going to jump right into it. So I'm going to let Akil start off.
Hello, Rahel. This is Akil.
Hi, Akil. How are you?
I'm pretty good. It is a pleasure to have you on our show this evening, and I have a question to ask you. Please explain to our listeners exactly what Urban Cuffs is and your inspiration behind creating the site.
Definitely. UrbanCuffs.com is an online lifestyle magazine. It intersects faith, politics, global awareness, progressive urban culture. And what I mean by progressive urban culture is that it's a lot of what many of us are passionate about, hip-hop and entertainment and music and fashion, but looking at it through a lens that is also meaningful. So not entertainment just for entertainment's sake, but really looking at how all these things affect our identity, our contributions to the world. So if we're talking about maybe hip-hop, we're talking about it in a way that you're probably not used to hearing. And it's gone beyond just an online magazine. We've also hosted a lot of events and a lot of interviews. And I'm really looking forward to what might come in the next year.
Yeah. How you doing, Rahel? This is Jimmy. I'm a huge fan of your bloggers. You know, I tweet you and send you Facebook messages sometimes when I read the articles. I'm glad to have you here in the war room because, like I said, I am a huge fan and I read your blog every day. With that being said, you were recently named the Impact 2012 Leader of the Year. How does the mission of Impact coincide with that of Urban Cuffs? And what is the significance of winning this award to you personally?
Impact is an organization that whose work that I admire greatly. And their focus is ensuring that people of our generation are committed to issues of politics and social awareness. And a lot of that has to do with civic engagement. Are we voting? Are we politically aware? So this is obviously all the things that Impact does. While Impact has a focus that oftentimes relates to policy and the work of congressional officials, we tend to have a more on-the-ground approach. So how does this play out in people's everyday lifestyle? And so you bring the two together, and what we both try to do is really look at how we can be politically and civically engaged on a daily basis, but then also what happens in a big election year like this one, what do we need to do to ensure that we're vote ready? And so for them to recognize me as the Impact Leader of the Year, I mean, it means a lot to me, especially because when I developed Urban Cuffs a year ago, the last thing on my mind was awards. You know, it was really just about my passion and what I wanted to share with the world, and it never occurred to me that a year later I'd be receiving a recognition like that.
Wow.
Gotcha. Rahel, this is Bradley. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. So you're a journalist?
Huh?
I said you're a journalist, a theologian, social activist, you're Urban Cuss founder, you're a writer for the esteemed Washington Post and philanthropist. Of all your accomplishments, which accomplishments have been the most rewarding to you, and tell us a little bit why?
Well, when I look back at my life, you know, honestly, it's my entire life story. You know, I sometimes talk about where I originated, but, you know, a lot of the success that I have today means so much more because of my title. And, you know, I came to America as an undocumented immigrant. I didn't speak any English. I went to all public schools, never had private education until, you know, college. So in large part, it's just my story in general that I think I'm often most proud of. Now, recently, you know, I was obviously very proud of winning the Impact Leader of the Year award, and I was also very proud of the position I got at the Washington Post, particularly because I grew up in D.C., and, you know, I used to see the Post as like this media icon in the city, and, you know, to have just known that I started as a freelancer in Southeast D.C., and now I'm writing for perhaps the second most popular and largest media outlet in the country. So it means a lot to me.
Ah, you grew up in the area, huh?
I did.
All right, this is Devin, and I'm going to switch gears a little bit, and we're going to discuss some social issues in our world, which you know is the world of sports. ESPN recently ran a documentary entitled Broke, which highlighted the fact that a large percentage of professional athletes, and sadly to say, a lot of these former athletes were black. They faced financial troubles only a few years after retirement from their particular sport. We also did a show on this here back in the War Room, probably November of 2010. Do you have an opinion on what the outlying factors may be that leads to this phenomenon?
I think it's a very important question. Financial literacy is obviously a major, major issue with athletes, particularly African-American ones. You know, it's very similar to, in some ways, we often say that the easiest ways for African-American males to become millionaires is to either become rappers or athletes. And it's one of the fastest roads that a lot of them, you know, take. And it's not to say that it's not a road that requires hard work and determination, but oftentimes they make it there without having been properly prepared.
Right.
Because oftentimes they're going from these urban communities where they're not equipped with a lot of, you know, resources in the community to understand how to be more fiscally responsible. They get all that money, and they're in many ways acting the way they would have if they would have still lived in those same communities. And as a result, they don't have long-term spending habits in mind to ensure that they're not just living for today, but they're planning for tomorrow. But I think fiscal responsibility is just one of many examples, because another issue is how are they adjusting in terms of, you know, mental health? How do you go from no one knowing your name to millions of people knowing your name? And when you go through that overnight success, how do you psychologically and emotionally deal with that? But also even relationships, you know, a lot of them go from having, you know, a girlfriend to countless, you know, women who are seeking them out, and are they protecting their bodies? So I think financial literacy is just one of many examples of how athletes need to be prepared for a lifestyle that will forever change who they are. And based on, you know, some connections that I personally have in the sports world, I definitely have heard of life coaching courses that a lot of them go through.
Right.
But it probably needs to be institutionalized more.
Yeah, because in most sports, you know, rookies will go through a rookie symposium, but that's like a 1 or 2 day thing. They may get 30 minutes of someone telling them what they should and shouldn't do with their money. But, you know, many of us, we just don't think that's enough. You know, so we kind of sometimes it's you're walking a fine line on what the league's responsibility is in it versus what the player's responsibility is in the whole thing. But I guess they do have to take a bigger look into it because you are giving millions of dollars to basically teenagers. So I don't know. You shouldn't just, I guess you shouldn't just throw them out there to the wolves.
Right. I mean, they have an individual responsibility. But I mean, also with the role of mentorship, you know, you use the phrase,
right.
But there are also, you know, seasoned and veteran athletes who have been around, you know, and know what to do. And they could institutionalize mentorship
right.
in such a way where the older players are offering guidance to the younger ones. But it's oftentimes so individualistic, you know, that they might have a team and you see the, you know, the cohesive identity when they're out on the field. But how supportive are they of each other when they're off the field?
Right, right.
Yeah, that's a great point. Rahel, I have a question I'm dying to ask you. It's due to the popularity of the Lingerie Football League, the November 2012 debut of the Bikini Basketball Association is almost upon us. As a woman, how do you feel about what many perceive as objectification of women for the sake of athletic entertainment? I mean, some people say, hey, it's all fun and jobs, but at the end of the day, this is not the WNBA. This is the Bikini Basketball Association. What's your opinion of that?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, when I watch boxing, and they, you know, they have the women in the bikinis come out and they hold up, you know, the posters telling you what round it is. I cringe, you know, because I see no value in that whatsoever. You know, what it devalues the woman, it devalues the sport, and it makes women props that are just, you know, put in these athletic arenas for male enjoyment. I really think that it is archaic. It's gotten to a point where we're so advanced in society that it's kind of almost despicable, some things that we still allow to get done. Now, granted, women have full agency, so these leagues wouldn't exist if women weren't a part of them, right? And you could also say that there's nothing wrong with, you know, highlighting our beauty and our sexuality, and every woman has a right to celebrate that if she so chooses. The problem I have with that is, I mean, I'll use the example of this. There was recent controversy over the fact that First Lady Michelle Obama and Mitt Romney's wife engaged in a bake-off. And this is actually something that happens, you know, every time there's a presidential campaign. I believe that it started in 1992 during Hillary Clinton's tenure as First Lady. And the point is, it may not be lingerie, but it's still a way in which women are in the backdrop in these very traditional roles of our bodies or our sexuality or our cooking skills, whatever it is, and we're not prided for our intellect, for our brilliance, you know, for our personal accomplishments. So I personally, you know, would have as much problem with one as I do the other, you know, and I think lingerie obviously brings in another element, but it's still a way in which we devalue the contribution of women in society.
Right, because actually, if you take a peek at one of those football games, the level of play is probably higher than a lot of people expect when they turn to that channel. But, you know, then when you're being serious, you have to ask yourself, like, why do they have to do this in lingerie? Like, it's kind of a weird mix there, but
yeah.
Sex sells. Sex is always sold, and, you know, they're capitalizing off of it right now. But also,
it is the way of the world. Rahel, black protectionism is a term used in and outside of sports to describe racially biased analysis and commentary of famous athletes and people of African-American ethnicity. To use a sports example, there's a notion that some black people actually overrate certain athletes simply because they feel a certain duty to protect or go easy on these athletes because they are indeed, you know, they're black. Taking it outside of the realm of sports, do you think this way of thinking is healthy for the subject being discussed, or do you think the lack of objectivity hinders the subject in their attempt to be all they can be?
Okay, so for the sake of our listeners, I'm going to ask you to say that in a very dumbed-down way.
Dumbing down? So,
dumb it down just a little bit.
Dumb it down. So a lot of times you'll have black folks that will, I guess, turn the other cheek or turn a blind eye to an athlete's behavior or an athlete's stance because he is black. We can use Michael Vick as a case, you know, black in the black community. And some of us even on the show, I know why, for one, I didn't really think that dog fighting was that big of a deal. But you had a lot of black folks that said, well, why'd he go to jail? You shouldn't have went to jail at all. And then, you know, the general mass media felt a different way about it and thought that he didn't get enough time. So the thought being, black protectionism is kind of a bias that goes into analyzing an athlete. How do you feel about that, both inside sports and outside of sports? Is it good for the athlete or good for the subject?
I don't, and black protectionism is never a term that I have ever factored into my worldview. You know, it's never a term that I've used. It's not a dominant approach that I have in looking at the world, in large part because I think black people need all the protection they can get. You know, so if there is such a thing as black protectionism, then I think we should maintain it. And the reason that I say that is, in the same way that we could argue that, you know, folks had Michael Vick's back, we could also argue that someone like him would be incarcerated for, you know, for being engaged in dog fighting, whereas, you know, maybe some white athletes may have been engaged in something that where someone could have resulted in being killed or something even more, you know, other heinous crimes and served no time, right? So there's always a double standard, especially when we're talking about incarceration and a penal system for what black men, black athletes included in that, will get, you know, over and above their white counterparts. So if we are talking about black protectionism, what we're talking about is the desire that the black community has to protect its own because they know that they're a part of a system that is socially, economically unfair to them. And I'm not saying that there's never a bias, right? There's always going to be a bias. There's even a bias in the fact that we let all these hip-hop artists get away with being drug dealers for decades, you know, or years throughout their upbringing, making tons of songs about it, rapping about it, celebrating it, and then turning around and not giving back to the community. I mean, we let them get away with that, right? But we also understand the environment that they were a part of that made them feel they had limited choices. And so we look at all of this in a grand context of things and we say, you know what, at the end of the day, it is our duty to protect our own. And it's interesting that we're talking about this in the context of affirmative action when the Supreme Court is actually debating whether or not there's still a need for race to be factored into, you know, college admissions. And I'm a big advocate of affirmative action because I feel like until the playing field is leveled, right, until all things are equal, there is a need to factor in how unfairly and unjustly treated black men and women and Latino men, women are, you know, in various aspects of society.
Right. Now the example that B. Austin used, you know, he used Michael Vick getting arrested. I understand everything you're saying about that. The only problem I have with the whole situation when you bring it back into sports is when people translate that into, you know, they translate that protectionism into overstating one's ability on the court, you know, the basketball court, the football field, or whatever the athlete plays. That's the only time when I have a problem with it. And I think as an athlete, the protectionism may actually hinder you as an athlete because if everybody's telling you that you're so much greater than you already are, you know, it may stop you from working as hard as you can work to be the best that you can be. But, you know, the way you took it outside of sports, I totally understand what you're saying.
But let me quickly respond to that and say I don't think that that's black protectionism. I think that's black stereotyping or stigma because what you're talking about is more so assumptions that are made about athletic ability of black men, particularly over and above white men, you know. And so if you see an African-American man with a certain, you know, build, you would assume that he's going to play basketball better than his white counterpart. And that's not protectionism. You know, these are age-old stereotypes. These are stigmas about what we are capable of doing. Oftentimes we're believed to be more physically strong than we are intellectually strong, you know, in relation to our white counterparts. So I do think that's harmful to athletes, you know, but that's not protecting them. I think that's placing them in a box.
Let me give you an example of kind of what I mean. Like if we're taking an objective approach, talking about Michael Vick or Donovan McNabb, and we're just talking about what they do on the football field. Has nothing to do with them personally. If we say anything that's critical, we get a lot of black people who tell us that, you know, we shouldn't be critical of these players because they're black and because we're black. But that would take away from us doing our job as sports analysts if we couldn't be totally honest and totally objective when analyzing an athlete. So that's the point that I was making.
I see what you're saying. We had that conversation on Urban Cuss. One of my writers, Timothy Jones, wrote about LeBron James and, you know, why he thinks that LeBron gets the criticism that he gets. And he did argue that he thinks a lot of it is rooted in race and racism, that if it was, right, you know, a white athlete doing all the same things that LeBron James did or said all the same things that LeBron James said, he wouldn't get nearly as much criticism. And, I mean, there is somewhat of a point there, because part of what I think he's saying is black men, black athletes oftentimes have to be so much more conscious of not coming off as aggressive. I mean, you know, this is coming up right now with the presidential debate.
I was just about to ask you about that.
Right. So yeah, we can go there. Yeah.
Okay. It's election season, of course. So we'd definitely be remiss if we didn't ask the founder of Urban Cuss about the presidential race. Just like we were just saying, in sports, aggression is celebrated and is basically a requirement for success. Now, there's a public sentiment going around that President Obama should be more aggressive in this campaign, in the debates, even in his presidency altogether. However, there's the threat of him looking like the angry black man, quote-unquote, if he does, but people may think that he lacks confidence if he doesn't. So what's the balance that you think a black man in his position of power, or any black man in any type of power, what's the balance between confidence and charisma and coming off as angry or overly aggressive? What do you think that balance is?
I think it's a nearly impossible, you know, balance. I think it plays out so well in sports because of how many athletes we know and love have reputations tarnished by, you know, lashing out against fans on the court or, you know, cursing out a referee, actually hitting someone and attacking them. And we have these images shown over and over again of black men's inability to control themselves, you know, their inability to respond to disappointment or defeat. And it's a part of this larger narrative that black men are animalistic, you know, something to be afraid of. And I think Barack Obama specifically has been dealing with this all along. I mean, if you remember when he was a candidate and he had those images of Curious George and he was constantly being depicted as a, you know, as a monkey. I mean, we have to remember how loaded that racism was and has been throughout his whole entire campaign, you know? And so it's a real threat. I mean, he faces these piercing eyes in ways that no other president has because of his race. So in some ways, I applaud him because it is his control, his demeanor, his sophistication. Now, the flip side, the caveat is you never want to lose yourself in that, right? Because you also have to transcend above fear and say, regardless of what the stereotypes are, I'm not going to allow them to stop me from being me. Because he ultimately won on a platform of selling himself and where he came from and who he is. So if he can't convince us that he's still that confident, outspoken, you know, I'm the man for this job, if he can't convince us that he's still that man, then what's going to get him reelected?
Right. All right.
Okay. Right, Rahel, this is Akil again. Before I ask the last question, I just wanted to give a shout-out to the Habesha community in Eritrea, your home company, your home country, and my wife happens to be from Ethiopia, and kind of had a similar story coming here and not be able to speak English and come to college graduate and working as a professional now. So I just wanted to give you a shout out for that.
Woo! Now, I appreciate that.
And I love Injera Dodowit. I haven't had Kitfo yet, but yeah, we try to.
I haven't had Kitfo yet, so don't feel bad.
Okay. And for those that don't know, Kitfo,
I have
like
no idea what y'all talking about.
it's a beef that isn't really cooked that much, and they had spices to it, and supposedly it's really good, but I haven't had it yet. Now, please tell our listeners how to find your site, your writing, and anything else you'd like to promote.
Definitely. UrbanCusp.com, which is the word urban, U-R-B-A-N, cusp, C-U-S-P as in Paul.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, at UrbanCusp. I'm also on Twitter, which is my first name, Rahel, R-A-H-I-E-L, last name, T. And lastly, definitely check out my articles on the Washington Post. I write for three different sections, but if you just Google my name and Washington Post, all my articles will come up.
Okay, Rahel, thank you again for joining us in the War Room tonight. We thoroughly enjoyed it, and we hope to have you back someday. We actually have to get some of your sports writers on, too, to talk about some of the articles they write because we find them very interesting. And it's
definitely
more along the social lines like we like to talk about.
Yeah, they would love that. So I'll be sure to connect you to them. And thank you so much for having me. You all are a great team, and I really appreciate all your work.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care.
Guys. All right, Rahel, test for Miriam, everybody.
I'm going to say goodbye to you.
All right, that's what's up. We had a call waiting
online
for a while, so I'm going to go to the Digital Extreme Tech Hotlines. We got the homie Lou White. Lou, what's up, brother?
Fellas, how y'all doing?
We good,
what's good?
Man. Sorry to keep you on hold that long.
Man, don't worry about it. I'm going to run down real quick the fastest 2 minutes, and then I will answer any question that you have. Going back on topics that I was listening to, this is my favorite time of the year, of course. All the sports are going on, from WNBA to baseball, football, college football, pro basketball. You know, it's all going on right now. This is my time of year. But getting to the women's lingerie league, I mean, sex sales, competition sales, I mean, and the sports sales itself. So with that going on, it's not really a degrade to women because those are the ones that really want to play and those are the ones that are out there playing the most. So some take it as degrade, the others take it as competition. The other ones want to sell their sexy side. So for whoever the lady was that was just on, yeah. Now, women
either way,
I'm a
man, so, you know, I can't say I'm
right.
Not going to watch. So.
You can't say that the women are degrade. Look, you can't say that.
I can't say I'm not
going
to watch.
So.
I don't know what they're doing, but I ain't.
Crazy part is Even women love other women's bodies, like, you know, and I'm not even talking
right.
about
right.
You know,
I love girls that love girls that love girls.
There was a huge my head shook 1,000 times, like, listening to her say that you know, women in sports are being degraded. When you turn around and when you turn on NFL, you see Pam Oliver, you see Aaron Andrews, you see everybody on the sidelines reporting, showing their educated side. So to turn around and say that they're belittling themselves, you know, that just seems like somebody that's kind of out of touch and doesn't know how business works. You
damn.
Know, when business,
there's a
God
somewhere.
When business gets a rolling, and you know, and you have these sponsorships that pay for different advertisements, whatever's going to get the attention of the people, so they can understand what we're selling is what happens. Now, if the females feel like, you know, this is beneath us, we don't need to advertise that way, I'm pretty sure that they will come up with another way of getting that advertisement across. But if there are women that accept it and volunteer, and they'll do it. You know, then you mean that's where the problem is. You always have the undercutting in business. Somebody will do it even if you won't. So, as being professional, she can come out there in a business suit, you know, and do the same thing. But if somebody else will cut underneath and say, well, look, I'll wear this, I won't even wear a business suit, then it's going to sell. So, going to the next topic, which was young athletes and money. It's a responsibility of parents, grandparents, and family. You know, you talk about the mentorship and the past players that played. You can't really put a responsibility on someone to reach back and try to help someone young. As you know, we've all been there. Being young, it's kind of, we all had a hard head at some time, and sometimes you can't just get through. Don't forget that people are human. So here it is, someone that's on their way out, some older guy trying to talk to somebody who's a young, up-and-coming prima donna at this point. You know, he's not going to listen until he takes his own rocky road. So you kind of got to let them, you got to let them let their, get their lumps. So, you know, trying to say that these mentorships, programs, and things of that nature, you can have all those things in place just like all of the sports do, but it's not going to be effective until they take their own lumps and they actually go through the repercussions that come with those mistakes. And getting to, yes.
Oh, I was going to say I'm interested in where you at these days, man. Because you humble, you a humble brother, but you got to let our listeners know that, you know, you do the thing with the rock a little bit yourself.
Oh man, I'm actually at home, man. You know, I kind of had a family situation with one of my with my father. He actually had a stroke, man, and I'm sticking home, taking care of my father, doing that, you know, making sure he gets back on the track. And then, you know, everything that I do will come, you know, second. So family primary and everything else, Yeah, don't worry about it. He's recovering well. He's recovering well. So, you know, that just comes first and everything else comes second. So, Man, you ruined my fastest 2 minutes.
It was way beyond 2 minutes.
Good, yeah. Oh, okay. Back on the thing. When they were,
all right, hurry up, man. We almost out of time.
Were you talking about the dog fighting, and they were talking about the different things about that and how it would look down on as far as that. Well, there's certain things that come with you know, people talking about the dog fighting and the animal patrol and all of that. I just don't see any of those people, you know, making signs and standing up when there's MMA on TV or when there's that hunting channel with that guy with that $3,000 rifle. It's not like he's hunting for food, you know what I mean? So I'm kind of torn between hearing that dog fighting crap versus I could turn on TV and sit there and watch somebody kill something for nothing. Okay. if you understand where I'm going with that.
Yeah, I feel you.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Hey, yeah. I don't want to hear anybody else say anything about what he was fighting dogs. Well, yeah. I turned to Comcast Sportsnet and I see this guy crawling and whispering and oh, it's a magnificent five pointer and yeah, I'm gonna take it down for what, to put on your wall? I mean, but then you say this guy was like fighting dogs and it's a problem. The only difference is Uncle Sam didn't get his taxes behind it. That's the only difference.
Yeah, Lou, last time we had you on, you know, we were just talking about your basketball career. I see we're going to have you back on to talk about some of these social issues in sports as well. Lou be running it down, you know. He runs it down, so we definitely got to schedule something and do that.
That's not a problem. And the last point was the athlete's protection, and they were talking about, the athletes –
Black protection.
Yeah, they were saying as far as like, you know, when he does something wrong, you know, blacks tend to, you know, jump down and you know, protect each other. But that's actually an overall thing because the way that the sports industry is set up, you know, it's all a pawn / slavery, however you want to look at it, because it's you have this 44% tax bracket that a lot of people are into, and if you're in trouble and not playing, I can't tax you. So. It's the business, so let's get them back out there. Whether you shoot yourself in the leg in the club, or whether you run over somebody and kill somebody in the car, no matter whatever it is that you do, I will soon get you back out there so that I can get that 44% from you, and you know, and we move on. So, yeah.
Whether you smack your mom.
I'm open for questions. I'm open.
Man, you ran it all down. No, I'm dead serious, though, Lou. We're going to have you back on, and we're going to talk about all these social issues when we got more time. Because I agree with a lot of the stuff you said. Some of the stuff we may not agree with, so we might have to have a debate on the air. So we're going to hit you offline afterwards, and we're going to set up a time for us to do that. Thanks for your call tonight, man. We appreciate it.
Man,
we will be
back.
And
listen, during the debate, there will be no interrupting, no leaning, no eye gouging. No, I understand what you guys do over there. I understand. You're Philly fans. You're Philly
right.
fans.
You know what we do.
Oh,
here you know
we
do. All right, man.
All right, Lou. Thanks, homie.
All right, Lou.
All right, Lou. 49ers. 49ers.
Lou came on the Gator. Fastest 5 minutes in sports.
for those who know, Lou is a pro ball player, and he has, like Dev said, you know, he has an opinion on everything, and you know, whether you agree with him or not, he has his opinion.
Yeah, so next time we have him on as a guest, you know, anybody who want to debate, want to go up against Lou, make sure y'all call in. Don't waste the opportunity.
Yeah, no doubt. Real quick, let's talk a couple more NFL stories real quick, and I'll make it very brief because we're running out of time, but our NFL Rapid Sports is by Stitcher Smart Radio. And just go to stitcher.com/thewarroom, one word, to download the app and use the War Room coupon code to win some bread. I see we got the homie in our chat room, Ezra from Idiot Sports Talk, and he's a huge Jets fan. So let's talk about the JTS Jets, and one Terrell El Dorado Owens, PJ's cousin, sending out tweets and, you know, and doing his thing, trying to get picked up by the Jets. What do you guys think about T.O.?
You know what I think, Jim? I'm thinking, why not? You know what I mean? Give T.O. a shot. I mean, their receiving core is depleted right now. You can get T.O. for dirt cheap. I mean, he's going to be the best talent you can get for the kind of money that he can demand right now. I'm just saying, why not take a shot? Unless they just think the season isn't totally in the crapper. And, you know, maybe they're going to try to move on with what they call character guys, quote unquote. But other than that, I can't see why. If not T.O., why not Chad? Why not bring in somebody who knows the system in Plaxico? But I'd take a flyer, man, if I was the Jets at this point.
Okay.
You know I take him. My man ain't doing nothing right now but doing push-ups, tweeting, doing push-ups. He ready. They ain't got nobody else better on that squad. They can go for character guys, but, I mean, the coach is the anti-character guy. So, I mean, don't steal T.O. in the pot, you know what I'm saying? In that market, listen, controversy sells. Throw my man in there.
Yeah, PJ is a huge T.O. fan. PJ wants T.O. on the team when T.O. about 64 years old.
He's still running a 4-4. Why not?
In his defense, I mean, Cromartie is their best receiver.
Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, I remember he said that before the season started. There's a little more that goes into it than he probably realizes, because I saw him catch a deep pass down the right side
out of bounds
this week, out of bounds.
Six yards out of bounds.
Most receivers who do that for a living, you know, kind of know where they are. They're not just going
to
run out of bounds like that.
And he tried to drag his foot when he got out of bounds.
I mean, they have quarterbacks who are going to throw the ball out of bounds, so sometimes you got to jump out there and do that. But, I mean, we have, you know, our resident Jets fan in the chat room from Idiot Sports Talk, Ezra, he's saying sign T.O. over Chad and Plex.
Yeah, he wants T.O. over Chad and Plex. Moe said she's ready to take Chad. I don't know. Who would you got? I mean, well, that's a crazy question. I think most people, I mean, not really. PJ would say T.O. I probably would say Plax just because he played there, but something got to be up for them to let Plax walk. And, you know, considering their situation, something else is up to that. But
T.O. Plaxico at this point is, you know, he's just a possession receiver. He's not as fast as these other guys. He's good for you in the red zone, but, you know, the Jets need to get to the red zone before they need somebody to good
the rest of them. Hey, real quick, Chad Johnson.
I was gonna say Chad Johnson
hasn't done anything in like 5 years. Even when T.O. played with Chad Johnson, T.O. was the better receiver. So I agree with Dev.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, T.O.
Yeah. That is true. He did play better.
That's a good point. He outplayed Chad when he played
Cincinnati.
Yeah.
And Chad,
and like I said,
there's
not really a risk involved. You sign him, it doesn't work, you cut him. Not much of a
because you know he's willing to play for anything. You probably can give him, like, you know, a dozen donuts for like $34. He might play, so
he'll eat donuts. You had to give him some asparagus tips or spears or something.
Jim,
he hurting for cash right now though.
Is he?
You got to give him something, even if it's not cash. You got to give him something that he could trade in.
Give him
like a pair of retro Jordans or something he could sell.
Y'all remember Cromartie?
I got a pair.
Like, they would have to front him his money like the Jets did to pay like back child support, like how the Jets did for Antonio Cromartie.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yo, the last topic I want to get into, and I like to see what our chat room thinks about this as well, is this whole situation with Norbit. or RG3 for those who don't know, we call him Norbit, Bob Norbit.
Because
he got rocked, and they're talking about him coming back and play this week. What's your opinion of this whole thing? Like, would you sit him out or?
He's been cleared to play, and he is practicing. And the funny thing about it is, he takes shots like that every week. Now, in the beginning of the season, it was more because of the play calling. They had him, you know, running out on the edges a lot. They had him running option plays and everything. This time, he was scrambling, looking for someone to throw to. But I think this is a lesson for him. This is the NFL. You have to get rid of the ball quicker. You know, you're running around. These linebackers are almost as fast as you are. And if you're not sliding the way you should, you know, if you're not getting out of bounds, if you're not throwing the ball away, they will put a lick on you. As far as his concussion goes, they said it was mild. But I don't know if I invested all of this money on my rookie signal caller and all of this, all the draft picks that they invested on him, I don't know if I'm that desperate to throw him back out there that quickly and risk him taking another shot while this particular concussion, you know.
Agreed. And then when you look at what's going on in the NFL, first of all, the NFL is getting sued by a gazillion players for the head injuries. Jim McMahon's losing his mind. People committing suicide. I mean, it's just craziness all over the place. And with this being at the forefront of sports.
Ricky Waters even losing his mind.
Yeah, Ricky Waters been lost his mind. But I mean, still, like, with this being at the forefront of sports, it's like, I wouldn't even take this risk. You invested a lot in this young man, and he's a football player. He's going to want to play. But I definitely would. There's no way he can have all his faculties back by Sunday. I don't care. I mean, I can get a doctor right now to get, you know, never mind, let me be quiet.
And if you and he keeps taking hits, you might ruin him. He might turn into David Carr, Joey Harrington, or somebody.
I mean, they talk about, Michael, yeah, we got a doctor that cleared him. Doctors will say anything that you want for the right price.
Anything for the right price. I think it's early. I don't know, man. I've looked at this from a couple perspectives. Now, their backup quarterback, Kirk Cousins, is very talented. Some say he's a steal at a fourth round or coming into them in the fourth round. But they may believe that having RG3 on the field, Bob Griffin, they may feel as though he gives them the best chance at any legitimate run at the playoffs. So they can't afford to give away games. Remember, this is the Redskins, y'all. They can't afford to give away games. They don't have.
But at the same time, Austin, it's the Redskins, and they're fooling themselves into thinking that they will make the playoffs, and that might hurt, you know, their prized possession in the long run.
Long term.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Strasburg. You shut Strasburg down because you take it for granted. Now, granted, the season isn't that far along in the NFL.
They had the best record in baseball, so that was a decision that they could have taken back. You're the Redskins, you know, you're already under 500.
Right.
You know, I mean, Shanahan, he has an ego where I don't think he ever believes that he's rebuilding. So,
right.
He's out to, you know, he's out to, he thinks he's a contender right now. So, but
Bump
I think
RG3.
That might be to the
who
detriment
that running back?
Of his,
Running back they have.
Alfred, before, let everybody else weigh in because we got a couple minutes left and we got to get out of here. PJ, would you let RG3 play?
No, I wouldn't play him now. Just for all the points that y'all just mentioned, man, I concur. I have him.
Okay, how about you, Doc Bay? I know Doc Bay is into the whole injury thing. What do you think about this? Would you allow him to play?
To be honest, no. I would give him another week. Even if we lost this week, you know, it doesn't matter. I might sit him for like 3 weeks because, like Dev alluded to, if he gets popped again, like it's going to make it even worse than it is now. So I sit him for 2 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard both arguments, but like Idiot Sports Talk saying teams draft you to play. If you can go, you go. I just don't think the whole concept of like them saying he was cleared, that's a joke to me. Like, he was cleared.
Lance Armstrong, doctors was clearing him to take steroids.
Man, and that's a whole other issue we got to get into next week. But, Jimmy, it's time for us to
out of here.
That's right. Thanks for joining us again in the War Room, good people. Shout out to everyone in the chat room. The chat room is popping tonight on Facebook, Twitter, and all the callers who chimed in for adding to our fun as usual. Thanks, as usual, to Mike B. of Your Bookie's Money for his weekly picks And thanks to Rahel Tesfamarian for sitting in that War Room hot seat tonight. You can check her out at UrbanCuss.com. And again, tune in next week, same time, same place, for another episode of your favorite show. MMA fighter Kyle Sefcik will be back in the War Room to talk about his upcoming fight in Baltimore. Until then, enjoy your NFL weekend as well as the MLB playoffs. Be sure to catch our conversations, Facebook, Twitter, everywhere online. You know how we do. Check us out everywhere, babe.
Well, excuse me, take a few minutes to mellow out. Big Daddy Kane is on the mic and I'ma tell about a minimum limb of rhymes with strength and power. So listen to the man of the hour. Flow and go to a slow tempo and you know, sing ho, swing low, then yo, the show will go on. As I perform, transforming on stage like a Decepticon. But I'm not animated like a cartoon, I'm for real, shooting lyrics like a harpoon. Across the crowd, the listeners and spectators, so let's groove with the smooth operator. Sounds so smooth. D-Y-K-A-N-E, I'm good and plenty, serving many in any competition, wishing for an expedition. I'm straight up dissing and dismissing. Listen, rappers act so wild, I love the profile, front and hard, but ain't got no style. I give nightmares to those who compete. Freddy Krueger walking on King Street, confuse and lose, abuse and bruise the crews who choose to use my name wrong, they pay dues. Destruction from the exterminator, but in a calm manner, cause I'm a smooth operator. Cause I'm so smooth. Now girl, step up to this. One simple kiss and it's over, miss. So the nice dream as high as the price seem. Girlfriend, you've been scooped like ice cream. So just swing a fling, a gathering, try to cling, cause it's a Big Daddy thing. And I'm loving them right words far. So just play Marvin Gaye and let's get it on. I make it real good like Dr. Feelgood to make sure that my point is understood. That when it comes to this, there's none greater. Sincerely yours, the smooth operator. I'm so smooth. I'm so smooth. Now ain't that the Pockle and the Kittle Black playing? I'm a new jack, you need to be smacked. The way I play them and the way I display them to make them sound different in the way that I'm gifted and ham. Making sure every lyric is done fine and I make one line bright as the sunshine. Attacking like Robitussin on a corp. If you know like I know, step off. Competition, I'ma get rid of. You can't get a bit of, so just consider a break, the rest, vacation, hibernation, and make way for my smooth operation. I'm a smooth operator. I'm so smooth. I'm so smooth.
War Room Sports, www.warroomsports.com. What? Ain't no more to it.